Welcome back to another edition of Smart Driving Cars. We appreciate you taking time with us. I'm Fred Fishkin, along with the Faculty Chair of Autonomous Vehicle Engineering at Princeton University and co-author of the new book, The Real Case for Driverless Mobility, Alan Kornhauser. Hi, Alan.
Hey, good morning, Fred. And of course, the creator of the sixth Smart Driving Car Summit that we're going to put on at the end of May. If we're going to do advertising in the front, we might as well advertise everything, right?
Alan, there was another summit at Princeton University that took place this past week, the NJAI Summit. And this looks really interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of hype out there with a lot of things with AI and so on, and whether it really is artificial intelligence or not, it's a artificial tool, certainly. And I think, back in December, President Eisgruber and Governor Murphy signed an agreement that maybe the two entities should get together to sort of put New Jersey not only on the playing field of this emerging opportunity, but maybe even to lead it. There's certainly all the arguments in some sense that New Jersey, as we've argued with smart driving cars, is an ideal place to begin to earn some value out of all of this. Why? Because, we're most densely populated state. Apparently, we have the most dense concentration of technologists and people that have the capability to participate in this emerging opportunity and to really turn it into benefits to society, benefits to New Jersey, benefits to Princeton, benefits to the world. So it was a pretty high bar to set. And basically the first gathering or unveiling of this initiative, yet to be fully defined, was last Thursday. And it was a very impressive gathering. And what was most impressive about it was that that President Eisgruber, Princeton's president, came at 9 o'clock at the beginning, sat in the front, paid attention and listened until it was time for him to speak and give the keynote, whatever, extremely substantive at about noon, and then came back in the afternoon and sat into the whole thing. I mean, I've never seen, a dignitary he's more than a dignitary, but actually sit there and through the whole program, not out in the hallway, whatever, or doing something else, but out there just absorbing all the information and all the discussions and all the challenges that were put forward during the day. And what was even most impressive is Governor Murphy came at 9 o'clock. He didn't speak until really after President Eisgruber at around noon, and came back in the afternoon. And not only that, his wife was there with him the whole time. I mean, the three of them sat there and absorbed all this from the beginning to the end, just as the rest of us that were involved and invited, sat and really really came to try to come to grips as to the challenges and opportunities with this. And it was, to me, it was enormously inspiring. Well, of course, and my daughter on one side and Andrew Tunard, who basically has helped me, bring forth the Trenton moves and that whole concept on the other side of me. And it was just, to me, my goodness, this is really substantive for New Jersey, substantive to have all the people there from all the, let's say, technology movers and shakers in New Jersey come together. So this is serious, and the opportunities to really improve society, not only in transportation, but in healthcare and just governmental services. Here I am trying to do my income tax today. Why doesn't the IRS just do it for me? I mean, why are they still making me do it? Well, I know why the TurboTax would unfortunately fold. But my goodness, they have all the data. They could put together, they could just do it. Tell me what I owe. Why am I going through and doing this? And I have to find this receipt. Now, they know it all. I mean, I haven't been able to keep them out of it. But, you know, that's a frustrating detail.
I thought you were going to ask ChatGPT or something to do that.
Well, maybe, yeah, because there might be a chance that ChatGPT would, you know, come up with one of its goofy solutions and say, I don't know anything, and I get a refund. Oh, my goodness, I'd be like the happiest camper in the world. Anyway, that I digress. This is serious. And what was really interesting was how it can just help people. Just, you know, the idea is to really help people, and it was to me very invigorating. I put the link to everything in Smart Driving Cars. The presentations aren't posted yet, but they will be, and this is just the beginning. And you know, whether, you know, and Princeton and New Jersey is really a good place to do all this. Sure, Silicon Valley can go do whatever they want to do, although whatever. And we're not competing at all. We're going to cooperate. I mean, anyway, and to do this well.
Exciting. And one of the companies, of course, that's one of the individuals, I suppose we could say, who's playing a big role in all of this and has from the start is Elon Musk. And some headlines here. Tesla has cut prices for supervised FSD in half to $99 a month. And you have some comments on the story from The Verge by Andrew Hawkins, in which he called the price cut a reflection of the company's continuing financial hardships.
Yeah, and I don't know why he threw that in there. You know, in some industries, maybe price cutting, well, you know, getting rid of stuff while you're going out of business is a operational strategy and a pricing strategy. But why here, and why with this, and why with new software? I certainly don't see it. I don't see it as that. You know, I even recall putting in an e-letter about when 23andMe had a sale for $99, they would, you know, figure out my DNA and tell me some things about me that I had no opportunity to know. Ooh, I couldn't wait to jump all over that. It seemed to me that, oh my goodness, just, you know, last week, last month, last year, it was like not only $1,000, $10,000. I mean, took infinitely long to do. But what did all the people in bioscience do? They took that genetic marker and sort of figured out what it was and spent an enormous amount of computing and all of that stuff and figured it out and whatever and got it down to, you know, a way that somebody could offer it for $99. Oh my God, I'm all over it. That's what this seems like to me, okay? Because this is turning out to be a really difficult problem, really challenging. I mean, look, I've been dealing with this, with trying to bring automation to mobility for cities since, I like to say, I mean, in a serious effort since like January 1971. I'm almost like, you know, the folks at Plasma Physics Laboratory who want to bring thermonuclear fusion and absolutely, you know, free energy to everybody. It keeps saying, you know, we're going to have it. They've been working 50 years or more, and we're still not there. I've been working on this sucker for 50 years or more, and we're still not there. And in fact, in the last 20 years, you know, since DARPA, it's, you know, 20th anniversary of DARPA challenges, give or take. And you know, and the realization by, I like to think I had the realization before, but that made it clear that, my goodness, if you could put, it's called enough intelligence in a car and have it drive itself, then you take advantage of the, you know, enormous amount of blood, sweat, tears, money that's gone in to build this road infrastructure, and then just provide additional mobility on top of it. You piggyback the infrastructure. You know, prior to that time, we thought we had to build new infrastructure and have the thing operate by itself. But the only way to get it to be safe enough was if you guarded it, put it in its own little whatever, and made sure that no children were chasing balls and et cetera and et cetera. The realization was, boy, if you have to do that, good luck. Good luck. You know, for New Jersey, we were, you know, we designed, hypothesized systems that, you know, you could easily walk to and walk from. 10,000 stations, 10,000 miles of guideway. You got to go, you know, up to Wall Street and beg for a quarter of a trillion, if not a trillion, you know, maybe in 1975, $1980. Who's going to give you that? Plus, you have to pass these things by Fred's window, bedroom window. He's never going to let you do that. And so that was just, it became undoable until, my goodness, maybe we don't need all that. Maybe we can just go out there and use what exists. Oh my goodness, what a concept. And piggyback on that, oh my goodness, what a disruptive economic concept that might be. But we just had to put enough intelligence, you know, in the vehicle such that it wouldn't go boom. And you know, it's been 20 years people have been working on this. Of course we thought we could do it out of the box. You know, in 2005, we thought, 2007, we got her. Okay. Yeah, it's a little tougher. And it was 2009, that was 2014, that was 2018. And here we are sitting at 2024. And it is tough. We've made enormous advances, but it is tough. But here, you know, somebody who's been working on this is now created. What's the beauty of doing it this way? The beauty of it is that once it's in software, then the replication costs are essentially zero. If you have over-the-air updating, the distribution cost is essentially zero incrementally, and you can scale it. The incremental cost per unit is essentially zero. So the objective is to get to scale. And how do you get to scale? Well, you make it inexpensive. Why is it that people are on their phones all day long? Because you don't have to put a dime or a quarter into the payphone each time. And who knows what long distance charges. Like, oh, I need to call collect. And all of a sudden, ba ba boom, ba ba boom, ba ba boom. So that, you know, and if you look at, you get $100 from a new customer, for which the marginal cost of that new customer is essentially zero, boom. That whole $100 goes in to help pay for all the loans that you have to pay off for what it took you to collect it, to make it.
Well, even before the price cut, they had announced that everybody, all Tesla owners, would get FSD for free for 30 days. So that was an introduction. And then on top of that, then they cut the price that if you liked it, now it's $99. Yeah,
we know how to get somebody hooked on something, right? I mean, you know, everybody knows how to hook somebody on something that all of a sudden they might like.
Well, it's like the
you
Costco
always
free
give them a
Costco,
free taste.
Costco
I
free
mean,
sample.
you know, I mean, everybody does it all, whichever. That's capitalism, I guess. It's communism too, I guess. I don't know. It's everyism. You know, every kid running a lemonade stand knows that. Okay, that's not you know, advanced, you know, Goldman Sachs theory. I don't know, whatever.
Well, you include it in the newsletter,
but I think
Alan.
But I think that the idea is that my goodness, the marginal revenue associated with, you know, each one of these uses is really enormous. Why? Because each additional one, in a sense, the way the car is ending up being designed at this point is it has to have sensors and it has to have actuators, and it even has to have computers to not do the driving, to try to help us not crash. You know, the so-called, you know, call it level two, the advanced driver assistance. And I think we're at a pretty good point. We're getting to a pretty good point that those systems are working really well. But once you have the sensors, the actuators, the communications, and maybe you just have to upgrade the computer a little bit. Maybe not even upgrade the computer. The new software. Again, the marginal cost of adding on a new customer on this thing is essentially zero. So if that new customer gives you revenue, that goes straight to the bottom line. Now, of course, you got a lot of debt to pay from how you got there. But what, everybody knows this. Why are we even talking about it? Come on, you know, Andrew, you know this too.
Alan, you include in the newsletter some of the latest release notes from Supervised FSD, which includes some pretty responsible language about telling people what they should not be doing with it. Telling
yeah, of
people,
course,
this does not make your vehicle autonomous.
Right, and it's the rebranding that Tesla is doing right now is, my goodness, keep it going. Okay, let's get all that stuff out of the way. You know, this isn't driving you. Okay, but my goodness, it is. It is really pretty darn good, and keep going, but what, again, the keep going requires is, you know, we're not there yet, and you're gonna have to spend some more money before the first one is good enough. But as soon as the first one's good enough, then the second one is good enough at essentially zero incremental cost. And so is the third one, so is the fourth one, so is the nth one, so is the billionth one. Maybe a little bit incremental cost, but not much.
Meanwhile, Elon Musk on X had a post responding to someone that read, "It has been staggeringly difficult to make generalized self-driving work, requiring all that you describe above and more. The investment in," this is a key quote, I suppose, the investment in training compute, gigantic data pipelines, and vast video storage will be well over $10 billion cumulatively this year, but that is nothing compared to the $250 billion in cars on the road with Tesla-designed AI inference computers being trained by their drivers." Just talking about how you've pointed out just how expensive it is to get this accomplished.
Yeah, it is. The front end cost of this sucker is really big. And I guess, you know, we've oversold it up to this point, saying it's really small, or it might be small. And then we made some improvements and said, hey, let's put more into this. Let's keep going. This is like, you know, the energy department, Princeton Plasma Physics Laboratory, has been telling us about thermonuclear fusion and how it can, generate free electricity. And,
I was there
getting
to do
to.
a story for NPR, I think back in 1980. So.
Yeah, no, and everybody said it was hard. Whether or not everybody kind of realized it was going to be this hard, and we're still not there, but we're still making progress, and we're still working, and it's still worth a certainly a public investment, because what the return is so valuable. Now, whether or not getting to self-driving, getting to a driverless mobility opportunity is of the same worth. It's hard to argue that it is. It isn't. Whether or not the government or the public sector should be doing this and making it happen, probably you can't justify. But here it is, a private company that's out there doing its investment with investor dollars out there trying to make it. My goodness, I guess, at least that's what the economy that we have here tries to motivate. But the numbers are pretty staggering, the way we're approaching this problem now. I mean, what was it, 30 years ago or somebody put out there a spoof, even before maybe the internet or social media, about cold fusion, and we're going to have cold fusion, and therefore a little tabletop cold fusion thing was going to generate all the electricity and whatever that a person would need. Or I don't think I was dreaming that. I think I went through. Ooh, wow. So with respect to being able to have a vehicle drive itself or a machine drive itself down our roads and down my street and do it safe enough so that it is certainly a greater than net positive value to society. That challenge, so whether or not we can figure out a cold fusion way to do that, then maybe great. But right now, the way we're approaching this problem is that we're making these so-called models bigger and bigger, and now they're not even trained on images that need to be trained, that do the training, that need to be labeled, but we're doing it on video, which is probably the way it should be done, because we're not dealing with a static environment. We're dealing with at least a kinematic environment, if not, of course, a dynamic environment. And Elon refers to the amount of data you might need to do this well. And of course, he's figured out a way to basically capture those data almost for free. Why? Because it's part and parcel of the other. He's leveraging on the other product that he's out there selling, which is, driving a car. And so that's in some sense, of course, brilliant. But the other thing is to then take those data and then build the system that is then going to be able to then do this and be trained to do this. The way we're approaching it now is turning out to be computationally exceedingly challenging. Okay. And Jensen Huang at NVIDIA expressed that very clearly at the NVIDIA GTC. Everybody knows that. It was repeated, at the New Jersey AI Summit. This is, and to do that, the computers and so on, and time and everything, and electricity and all that you need is, as I guess Elon points out, it's in the order of 10 to the 10th dollars. At least that's what Tesla, he claims, is putting in there. 10 to the 10th dollars to just do the compute piece of this thing. But once you got it, then you can turn the crank on that thing. Then you just use it. You don't have to, you can, of course, improve it a little bit. but we're still in the process of getting it. And what it seemed like right now is, unless you're out there willing to put in 10 to the 10th dollars, you're going to need to be really elegant, really bright, really, you know, John Nash style bright, Einstein bright, to figure out, you know, the elegant way to do this that doesn't require the 10 billion. And who knows how much data and cost to get the data to do it. But once you got it, the marginal costs are essentially zero. And then that's the opportunity of scale. You don't build a thermonuclear fusion capability and say, "Ooh, I'm not going to scale that and build. If I can do that, I'm going to replicate. I'm going to do it all kinds of places." We just got to get to the point when we can do it. So anyway,
we still have
in the end, it's going to take big effort to do it. In the end, to do AI and do AI well for the benefit of society is going to take an enormous effort to do it. And I guess what is pleasing to me is to see, you know, the universities in New Jersey, the industry in New Jersey, the government in New Jersey, the public sector in New Jersey come together and say, "Hey, let's work together to make this thing happen and to gain value to society in return."
One more, or a couple more really quick Tesla headlines. Teslarati reports Tesla's robo-taxi unveiling event, set for August 8th, sets the tone for 2030 and beyond, according to Adam Jonas at Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, well, I put that in there because, of course, we love Adam, and Adam's been a big inspiration in all this, and a big visionary in all this. You know, it's really, in some sense, Adam's vision that has propelled and a lot of this. And I'm glad to see that Adam hasn't given up and is in there positive. Anyway, we just wanted to throw that in there.
You also put in the newsletter the story about Tesla settling the case over the fatal autopilot crash of an Apple engineer.
Yeah, I'm really pleased that they settled. It means that, you know, out of that tragic situation, you know, both sides are at least somewhat happy. And that's good. But I wrote back in 2018, right after that happened, and I looked at the scene and I said, I don't know that I wouldn't have hit that point in that diverge. I mean, you know, at some point, California Department of Transportation, Caltrans, has to be responsible here. Any of us that drive have to ask what of the transportation facilities. We've, you know, surface, smooth surface, some paint so that we can see where the lanes are, and maybe some signs so we understand where we're supposed to behave this way or that way or a different way as we travel. And the whole, you know, certainly coming out of the DARPA challenge, everybody that came out of that said, that's all we ask of. We're just asking. We're not asking you to bury magnets or cables or put all sorts of whatever communication gear out there, to do that. The fundamental underpinning of all this, what it was to use what exists, but to use it in a slightly different way that would enhance safety and mobility. And enhance the safety through use of information, real-time controllers, real-time sensors, and to improve mobility through the flexibility and the opportunity that once you get the models working, this has opportunities to scale. The scaling opportunities are such that the incremental element costs very little compared to the value that the incremental element is going to return. That's how to become disruptive here. And if you look at the approach, and I even linked to the back to the video that was taken by one of the reporters that revisited the scene, approaching that diverge point. You know, two lanes are diverging. You would expect that there'd be a lane line that you can see, so that those going this way stay to the right of that one, and those people going this way stay to the left of this one. Take a look at it. One is you can barely see this one over here. So depending on which way you're going, what are you supposed to follow? And then there used to be a crash arrestor there. Why did they put a crash arrestor there? Because, oh my goodness, of course you better have one. Why, this is a high-speed diverge point. My people are going like, you know, California. Who knows how fast they drive? And unfortunately, like 2 weeks before that, I think it was somebody driving a Honda. I guess they got confused by the lane markings, and boom. And that crash arrestor saved a person's life. Okay? But in the two ensuing weeks, did Caltrans go back and replace that in case somebody else or autopilot got confused? No, it wasn't there. Okay, it took them long to buy a new one and put it in, whatever, and schedule it in there. They didn't have, you know, a new AI scheduling system or something. Of course, they didn't back then. And didn't do that. Okay? And what is also with the paint, I think it is a standard. I have to go look at my manuals in terms of roadway design. But whenever you have a diverge point, you're supposed to have crosshatching in that area that says, that really tells folks, don't go in there because there's something up here that there's no crosshatch. It's not that it's worn away. Somehow Caltrans decided we don't need to put it there, because it's not there. What? So, you know, I guess they must have litigated that long ago or something, and hopefully New Jersey Caltrans went in there and said, oh, we're sorry, and, you know, here, you know, we need to settle this too with you. And I hope they've gone in there now and put the cross-hatching. And they've done that not only at this diverge point, but at the rest of them. Drive down a freeway somewhere. Go to the diverge point. You'll see it. And I hope every other state, maybe California is different. I don't know. But so this was a situation not only waiting to happen, it just happened the same thing. Essentially the same thing 2 weeks earlier, not with a computer driving a car, with a human driving a car. I bet, you know, hey, I wouldn't want to drive there. I'd be confused. Ooh. Then I wouldn't be here, Fred. Ooh.
Well, there are many places like that all over the country.
Look, it is really imperative. It is really imperative that all the road authorities make it so that people can see the lanes. And if people can see the lanes, it's trivial for these things to see the lanes. And nobody, I don't think there's nobody in the industry that says, hey, go put some things that only a special sensor can see. Because the system's been built for these guys. Guys like you that put glasses on, and guys that we have got cataract surgery, so I don't have to wear glasses anymore. so that we can see it. You do that, we're good. We don't need anything more. We need some signs out there to tell us what to do. You know, we try to train these things on soft stop signs with graffiti all over them. Please, take the graffiti off the stop signs, because by the time we have things out there that they're going to look at, have computers look at these things, how many other people are going to go there and may not recognize the stop sign? Wow. And if there's a bush in front of it, either move the stop sign or move the bush. Because, you know, just common sense, so that we can do this driving task. If the system out there is that so that we can do it, well, great. Now, you know, when we drive, it's okay if a kid chases a ball in the street. And that's why speed limits in communities are set at 25 miles an hour. We should behave and adhere to them, because then, you know, maybe we will see them in time.
Moving on, Alan, in the newsletter, Cruise resumes manual driving as the next step in return to driverless mission. It's a blog post from this past week. So Cruise getting back on the road, but with drivers on board initially.
Yeah, and we applaud them for coming back and not throwing in the towel. I mean, yes, things haven't gone well for anybody in San Francisco. And it is nice to see, you know, take a pause and let's fix up some things so that one doesn't get to those situations. And it looks like they're doing that, and welcome them back.
Our friend Bern Grush has published a review of The Real Case for Driverless Mobility.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bern. Bern and ITS International is very kind words. He leads up to it appropriately, saying, you know, what all the sort of other values of this are to the people who drive themselves. But there is, you know, the focus of the book, not only, you know, looking at this technology and the benefits for people that drive themselves, but the people who need a ride. And it remains astonishing that much of the industry focuses on more, almost all on people that give themselves a ride, and that's part of the market. There are so many people that need a ride for whatever reason, and I guess everybody, or essentially everybody in who's doing the work of trying to figure out what to do and solve the problems and pulling their hair out day in and day out, essentially all of them drive themselves. So the internalization of the opportunities and challenges are really focused on that. And I think that, you know, one of the things that Michael and I are focused on here with the book is that, look, there's also this other market of people who need a ride. And those people that need a ride, they need a ride. And it is different. Their needs are really different on the surface level and how you might deliver that than those that give themselves a ride and what their needs are and how to improve their lives. Some of the same technology can be used one to the other, but, you know, in some sense, one has, you know, higher hurdles in one area and higher hurdles in the other, but they are different. And we're just trying to get some people to focus on this one area over here that says these folks need a ride. And it also transcends to the movement of non-people, because non-people don't have the opportunity to give themselves a ride. All non-people need a ride. So if you're coal coming from Powder River Basin needing to go to Texas to some power plant, the coal doesn't just say, hey, I'm going to drive myself to Texas. It gets into a big long unit train, 200 car load, Burlington Northern. Or if I go on Amazon and order something and deliver it in 2 minutes. I don't know whether they deliver in 2 minutes now, 2 hours, 2 days, whatever it is. That package or thing can't just, hop in a and come to my front porch. It needs a ride. And then, the question is how do you use all this, all of whatever technology to make that process better? You get to define better. And where does automation fit into that? Automation does not necessarily mean replacement of human. It means take a look at the process that you have and see where in the heck automation might help you do something. All of a sudden, instead of maybe going this way and just replacing the human, you go this other way, maybe with some different humans or whatever, but you change the you take a look at the opportunity to change the process. And that same thought should be in any of this AI. Any AI doesn't say, hey, replace the human and use ChatGPT. It says, probably, hopefully it says, hey, you have the human in there, but ChatGPT helps you get started. When you get stuck, helps you get unstuck. Might still need the human in there to provide the creativity and so on. ChatGPT has no opportunity to give. And so you have to rethink the whole process as to how the process of where you're coming from to what you want to achieve. And so that kind of mindset exists both in the movement of non-people and the movement of people. And really, that's what the book's focusing on. How do you take that out of there? Obviously, if you can replace a computer, replace a driver with a computer, and you look at, if FSD could do it, or if somebody, whoever generates the real FSD and can make it available for $200 a month, productivity that you get out of the automation in terms of that vehicle, in terms of being able to go around it to do da 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 da, and provide trips to people when and who need a ride. Of course, there's the comparison to what the human could produce driving that, and it's enormously disruptive. But it's not really just, or not the rethinking of how humans will be used in the process. It's now the flexibility of the operation of the thing that it, in fact, can go bounce around and go pick you up, take you there, then go over here, pick somebody up, take somebody there, and then do, and then wait around and not be all whatever and get all bent out of shape, and then go somewhere, because this stuff, the diffusivity that meant what makes transportation so hard is the diffusivity in time and space. If everybody came from point A to point B at the same time, it'd be trivial. But that's not the way we live. Apparently, it's not the way we want to live. Because if we wanted to live that way, we would have all gravitated to those things, and that's where we would be. But if, you know, you stand up here and you look at where people want to go to, whether they're driving themselves or getting rides right now, today, as it exists, it's all over the place. So in fact, the biggest value of the automated driver is its flexibility to respond to demand, instead of making demand respond to it. I'll come from here, I'll go to there at noon. But so hard, not everybody sees it that way. I mean, to me, it's just so fundamental, it's unbelievable.
Well, that's going to be a big part, of course, at the 6th Smart Driving Car Summit coming up at the end of next month. Not far away now.
Yep. Well, the program is really getting there. I have a link to it. At least, you know, some of the people are still invite. They're still trying to, you know, manipulate their schedules and their, you know, do they have good reason to be here? They'll only come if it's the best place for them to go. Otherwise, they'll go do something else. So, you know, I'm going to be there because I know it's going to be the best place for me to go. But, you know, the rest of the world, who knows? They get to choose. But you can take a look at the program. The way we've decided that we're just going to have plenary sessions. We're just going to have everybody in there into all the sessions. And especially after watching the experience at the New Jersey AI Summit, and having both the president and the governor and his wife sit there all day in the same session and contribute and be in there, I think that's a great way to, if you come there, or we want you to not only absorb, but we want you to contribute and engage, and it is. It's not going to be like these podcasts in which I'm sitting there pontificating to everybody, I hope, but I not, because it's so hard to get engagement. But you and I engage a little bit, Fred, don't we? We engage a little bit, but certainly we want contributions from everybody in terms of not only what's coming from the dais, but also from the audience. And so we're going to have that, and basically, you know, we're breaking this thing down into an array sort of structure in which, we have in the columns, we have proof of concept, proof of market, proof of policy, politics and people, call policy, so proof of policy, and on the rows, basically looking at how this technology can help those that drive themselves. So basically focus on where we are and where we're going with advanced driver assistance systems. Of course, the driverless, the people that need a ride, and moving people that need a ride. And then the third row of this array is for goods, for non-people. They need a ride. And how does the proof of concept, proof of market, proof of politics, policy, and people differ in these? These are different markets, different challenges. And the 2 days are sort of lined up with Thursday being basically where we've been, where we are, and the challenges ahead. And then Friday is all focused on deployment, having this actually come out to and deliver value to society. And how do we do that? Not that we do another test, not we do another demo, not that we do whatever. How do we get this in people and goods hands packages, non-people hands, so that they drive themselves better, they get rides better, and both people and non-people get rides better. So that's sort of the organizational structure of the whole thing. Hopefully we have the best people in the world coming, or mostly from the United States, of course. That's the way it's all arranged. And then we'll have a couple gatherings and so on. Pre-gatherings.
Starts with a gathering on the evening of the 29th, and yeah. It takes place May 30th and 31st. And there's more info at smartdrivingcar.com, which is also where you can find us. And you can find us also wherever you turn to for podcasts, whether it's Google, Amazon, Apple, wherever. You can ask your smart speaker to play us too. You can find my tech reports and a special series this week on the real case for driverless mobility, a 5-part series that will be at textination.com, or listen to a radio station near you that might be carrying it. I'm Fred Fishkin along with Alan Kornhauser. Thank you for listening or watching. Please continue to stay safe.
Thank you, everybody. See you at the end of May. Ooh.